So we're in the middle of going through different opinions as to how to define what the outcome is of kotzer, what the definition is of kotzer, of cutting the branch. And so far, I believe we've come up with two different definitions. One, which is the opinion of many of the Rishonim, the Ramban, their understanding of the Bavli, which is that it's to remove something from its natural source. It's to remove it from its, from its source of nourishment. Where it gets nourishment from, so then to remove that from its source of nourishment is the problem of kotzer. Then we saw the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is clear that it has a broader definition. It includes cases of milking a cow and also removing honeycombs from a beehive. So it's clear that it's broader than just that. And so we wanted to explain for the Yerushalmi that the definition of kotzer, the cutting off the branch, is just cutting something off from its natural habitat, from where it was naturally grown, or was produced. Not just grown, but produced. The honey was produced in the honeycomb, so then to take the honey out of the honeycomb is a problem of kotzer according to the Rishalmi. So then according to the Rishalmi, that definition of kotzer is not to remove it from its source of nourishment. It's not like the honey gets nourished by the honeycomb. It's just to remove something from its natural habitat, from where it was produced or where it was grown, something like that. So I want to get into now two other definitions, potential definitions for kotzer. And I'm not sure if we're going to have time to finish all of this today, but if we don't, we'll do it. We'll finish it on Monday. And then we'll deal with halacha l'maisa, practical applications of kotzer. So let's start with this Yerushalmi. There's a lot more than just one source left. We only have one source left on Thursday and Monday. So the Yerushalmi is what we missed on Monday. And this is a new opinion in the Yerushalmi. Rabbi Yossi bei Rabbi Bon b'shem Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Basically, Rabbi Lakish says the following. And there's a lot of discussion on what this line means. Hanosein atitz nakuf agabe atitz nekuva. Chayev aleha mishim kotzer u'mishim zoreya. So if you place an atitz nakuf, basically a perforated flower pot, on top of another perforated flower pot, so then you have violated two things. You have violated kotzer, harvesting, and you have violated planting. Because you're putting the perforated flower pot on top of another perforated flower pot. So in terms of zareya, in terms of planting, so it's pretty clear as to why you have violated planting. I think once you put the second pot on top of the first pot, so they assume that it's going to now get nourishment from the soil, from the original soil, because since it's on top of a perforated pot, so then there could be some sort of connection that could be made to that top pot, to the pot that's on top of the bottom pot. So that's why you have violated zareah. That's why you have violated planting.
You violated which pot did you violate zareah with, the top or the bottom?
This is one pot. You place another perforated pot on top of it.
And presumably that,
and there's a plant in there.
Right.
There's a plant in there. Yes, there's a plant
there's
in
a
there.
Plant in both pots. Just the top pot.
Just the top one.
I don't know. It doesn't say. I'm not sure if it makes it for Zareya. For Zareya, I don't think it makes a difference because.
So let's assume that there's a plant in a top pot, right? So you have a pot of soil with a plant in it, and you put that pot now in another pot.
In a perforated pot, which is connected to the ground. Now, in terms of Zareya, just to focus on planting for a second, we say that you have violated both planting and harvesting. So in terms of planting, so I think it's clear as to why you have violated planting, because you're putting it on top of a perforated pot. So
let's say it wasn't perforated.
What?
Let's say I took a seed and put it in soil in a non-perforated pot. Would that be zareah?
Yes.
I assume it would be, right?
Yes.
So if I take this plant and put it in another pot, even if it's not perforated, if the bottom pot is not perforated, shouldn't
it's still fine
for zareah?
That's what I think.
Potentially, yeah. You could say that also.
So nothing to do with it being connected to the ground, not necessarily.
Well, it does say that it's an atitz nekuva, so it does say that it's a perforated pot. You're right. It's a good point.
Yeah,
let's say it's not perforated.
Yeah. So why does the second pot need?
Okay, so that's a great question. Maybe we'll address that in a few minutes. Well, why is it a perforated pot? So that's zareah. You have violated planting because I could tell you as follows.
I'm not sure why
I could tell you as follows. The bottom pot, which is a perforated pot, who says that has soil in it? Maybe it's an empty pot, an empty perforated pot. The point is, though, even though there's a barrier, there's a separation, since it's connected to the ground, it's still going to get nourishment from the ground. I could explain it like that.
It was getting nourishment from the ground before also, because it was
soil.
It was an utzitz nakov. It's correct.
It's in a perforated pot already, so it's already getting nourishment from the ground. So putting.
Well,
it in
let's slow down. You're making certain assumptions here, which also you're assuming that this. You're assuming the Gemara never said where this perforated pot was until now. You're assuming that it was on the ground, and you're picking it up from the ground and putting it into another pot. That's your assumption.
Otherwise, why would it make a difference that it's a perforated pot?
Because it makes a difference for where it's going in right now. If it wasn't perforated, it wouldn't be getting the soil from the ground.
A perforated pot sitting on my counter, and now you put it in a perforated pot.
Potentially. I'm not saying anything. I'm saying that the Gemara has not said anything about where it was.
Okay.
Right? So it's possible that bottom pot doesn't have anything in it. We don't know if that bottom pot has anything in it. If it doesn't have anything in it, so then the Gemara is just telling us that you have violated planting with the connection, even though there's a barrier of that bottom pot, you have violated planting because it does reach the soil. Somehow, because you have two perforated pots, it will get nourishment from the soil. So you have violated planting. So again, so we have this case here. We're in the first source. You have this case here where you take a perforated pot, put it on top of another perforated pot, which is by the ground. We say you have violated two violations. One is harvesting, one is planting. So we've dealt with planting. Planting, you have violated.
Why harvesting? I'm sorry to interrupt. Who hasn't done harvesting? That's eight.
He doesn't count.
I know.
He's not Jewish. He doesn't come to the shir.
And I haven't come either.
So the big question is, why have you violated harvesting in this case?
Yeah.
Why have you violated harvesting?
When you put one pot on top of another pot.
They're both perforated pots.
Yeah.
And you put one on top of another. So why have you violated harvesting? So this is a big dispute. I think it's a big dispute between the two major commentators on the Rishonim. There's the Pnei Moshe and the Korban Eidah are two of the big commentators on the Yerushalmi. They are, I believe, 18th century, maybe 17th century commentators. We don't really have so many earlier commentators on them from earlier generations. So they are the major commentators. They are found on the page of the Yerushalmi. And there's a big dispute between the two of them as to what exactly is going on here for you to have violated Thorish, for you to have violated, not Thorish, sorry, Kotzer. Harvesting in this case. Any guesses as to what's going on here with Kotzer? Yeah.
So if it's talking about a case where you had where the potted plant was connected to the ground.
Yeah.
And now you picked it up off the ground and put it in the other pot. So I would have said that you violated Kotzer right away. Even
what do you mean?
Even without the second pot, just picking it up off the ground is Kotzer.
Okay. So Rav Lechman is saying, like the Pnei Moshe. The case here, why have you violated Kotzer? Because you lift the pot, and then you, at the moment that you lift the pot, so you have removed it from the nourishment of the ground, and then you violate Zoreo, and you then put it back down on the other perforated pot. Right? So, if that's the case, so then this is interesting. Because then, Kotzer applies even in a scenario where you could a moment later put it back down and still continue growing this plant. This plant will continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
You have lifted it off the ground, and then you could put it back down, and very little has changed. You're right, for those 3 seconds that you've lifted it off the ground, it's not going to grow, or not grow as much. But you could put it back down, and then it'll continue to grow. Which is very different, if you remember, in the Bavli, we had the case of
the fish,
where you take the fish out of the water. And the Bavli said that in order to violate that, the fish has to dry up to the extent that if you throw it back in, it won't continue to live. Mm-hmm. And there were some commentators who explained that you have violated Kotzer in that case. Others, a lot of the Rishonim say that it's not Kotzer, it's a separate problem of killing the fish. But ignoring those commentators, there were other commentators who said that to take out the fish from the water, In order to violate kotzer, to remove it from its natural habitat, it has to dry up so, to the extent that you cannot even throw it back in. So that explanation of Pnei Moshe would go against those commentators. Because the Pnei Moshe is assuming you could still violate kotzer, harvesting, by just picking it up, even though you could put it right back down right away. You could put it back down. It doesn't make a difference. Since for that moment...
Maybe the reason why it's a violation is because you didn't put it back down.
You did. The case is where you did put it back down.
You didn't put it back down in the same spot. You put it down in another pot now.
But you're also violating also planting. So this pot will also continue to grow. It's clear that this pot...
But it's no longer in the same environment that it was before. It's no longer connected in the same way, in the same spot.
But does that make a difference?
Maybe, yeah, why not?
But, I don't know, it's going to continue to grow. But
particularly if it had some roots growing through the perforations into the soil.
So I looked into it. It doesn't need to have roots. Halachically, they don't need to have roots. We just assume that as long as there's some sort of hole, somehow there's nourishment is provided. You can ask questions.
For harvesting.
Also a good question, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But definitely for Zoraya. Definitely for planting. For planting, it doesn't need to take root to violate the planting.
It's
coating.
It's cutting it off from the ground.
And it would make sense that every time you would pick something up, and even if it was not connected for even like a second, and then you reconnected it, it would be again planting something, right?
That would be, you would be violate, we would violate planting for that.
Exactly.
Correct.
That's obvious, right?
Yeah, I think that's this case. This case, that's according obvious. To the Pnei Moshe, I think it's obvious that you would violate, yeah, that's obviously you violate planting. Even though it was already growing, but since you picked it up, it's no longer connected to the ground, putting it back down, you would violate planting.
Right.
The chiddush here, what's interesting here, is that you also violate kotzer, cutting, removing it from the original source, even though you're only picking it up for 3 seconds. You're picking it up for 3 seconds, and you could claim that the definition of cutting, removing it from its original source, is only in a scenario where you can never put it back together again. Right? You could make such a claim that it can't go back to its original source. Now, you could say, like Rabbi Lesman, that in the end of the day, this is going back to a different area. It's not going back to the same exact spot, it's going back to a different spot. So maybe because it's going to a different spot, so now all of the nutrients and everything, all the intake, is different than in its original spot. So you could make such a claim. It's true, you could make such a claim. I'm not sure if you can make such similar.
Why else does the Gemara pick a case where you're putting it into another pot?
Perhaps the reason why it's telling you that you're putting it into another pot is to tell you about Zoraya, not about Kotzer, that you're still violating planting, even though it's within another pot, which is you're not directly connected to the ground. But it's within another pot. Who said that that's telling you something about kotzer? Maybe it's telling you something about zoreh. Now, in the case of the fish, I just don't know. If you take a fish out of water up to the point in time where it's going to die, and then you throw it back in right at the last second, how much does that impact the life of the fish? Like, is there like permanent damage there? Like, I just don't know. I'm not sure if it makes a difference, but...
You gotta assume you've at least caused it a lot of distress, even if you haven't caused it any physical.
Will it continue to grow the same? Again, the whole concept of growing the same is also assuming that the definition is about removing it from its source of nourishment. If you say that the definition is about removing it just from its natural habitat, so it doesn't make a difference what happens to the fish. You're putting it back into its natural habitat and it's alive. So then you could also claim in this case of the pot. Since you're moving it to a different place, maybe that's viewed as a different place, a different habitat. You could make such a claim. Or I can make the opposite claim and say, no, the ground is the ground. And the ground is the natural habitat for the entire world. I can make both claims. But the Pnei Moshe is definitely, gives the case like Rabbi Lichtman, to say that the kotzer here is when you lift the pot off the ground, that's when you violate kotzer, because you're removing it from the ground, even though 3 seconds later, you're putting it back down onto the ground. There's a perforated pot in between, but it's essentially back onto the ground. And you have violated kotzer, even though you have just removed it for 3 seconds. The Karban Eidah gives a different explanation.
Why did they even mention the second perforated pot?
No, perhaps that's for planting. That's not telling you anything about.
I'm saying, why didn't you just say, picked it up, and put it down on another spot of dirt?
Because it's telling you that you have still violated planting, even though there's a barrier between your pot and the ground, because you're not putting it directly on the ground. You're putting it, there's something in between.
Right.
There's that other pot, which is underneath it, in between. You have still, it's nothing to do with kotzer, nothing to do with harvesting. It's telling you something new about planting. That you could still violate planting with a bottom pot as a barrier between the top pot and the ground. And that's why it gives you the bottom pot case. It's not because of the kotzer, but it's really about zareh, about planting.
The bottom pot has soil in it.
It might not have soil.
So you're talking about putting it, there might be a space of air between the bottom of the first pot and the bottom of the second pot.
Well, there definitely is. It has a, it's a perforated pot, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't, it could be just holes. It doesn't mean that it's totally empty.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. I just,
so there's an airspace. Yeah, there would be an airspace in between.
So it's still considered planting even though there's an airspace.
Yeah, you could still say that. Or you can say there's soil there. I don't know what the case is.
Okay.
It doesn't say what the case is.
One quick question. Is it important that the bottom pot is also perforated?
Yeah, it says that. It is perforated.
I know it says that, but
it
why
is definitely
that important?
Because if it's not perforated and there's no soil in the bottom pot, so then why would you have violated planting?
But how do you know there's no soil in that bottom pot?
That's my assumption, based on your question. Otherwise,
actually,
right.
You wouldn't have to mention it's perforated.
Yeah, if there's soil there, you don't have to mention that it's perforated.
Plant, obviously, planted.
Yes, correct.
Yeah,
This is all within this first understanding. This is all within the Pnei Moshe. What would be another way of explaining why have you violated kotzer in this case? Again, it's important to mention that we do not know where this original pot was. Hmm. It doesn't say where it was. If you look, we'll get to it in a minute. If you look at we'll get to it in a few minutes. So we don't know where it was. We're assuming right now in the first explanation that it was on the ground. You have violated kotzer by picking it up from the ground and then violated zoreya planting when you put it back down on top of another pot. That's when you violate planting. But let's say the case is not where the original pot was on soil. Let's say it was in your kitchen. And now you're just putting it down onto top of another perforated plant or pot. So how have you violated kotzer in that case?
And you said, we know you still have.
What?
You still have in that case?
That you have violated?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't say. I think it's important to note that the Gemara does not say where this original pot was. It seems to imply that we don't care where it was. If we cared where it was, then the Gemara should have mentioned, it should have specified. The pot was on the ground. You pick it up from the ground, you violate kotzer. You put it back down, you violate planting.
But
the Gemara doesn't say that.
Maybe we term one's natural environment is where it is when you start Shabbos or at some point, and irrelevant where it is, and moving something to a new environment.
That's a huge. So how do you do? Like how far are you going to take that? So how where I'm standing is also my natural environment. I'm not allowed to move from where I'm standing.
Well, we said a long time ago that just by closing the curtains might be considered changing its natural environment. You know, you block out the sun.
Potentially.
So even if it's inside on a table, if you move it to somewhere else, you might be moving it into a shadier place, moving it.
We'll get into it. It's definitely not a biblical prohibition because you're not directly involving the plant itself. It's indirect because you're impacting something else, your blinds, which are then impacting the plant. To open and close the blinds. That's more indirect. So it's definitely not a biblical prohibition. But you're right, fundamentally.
But that idea of closing the blinds, you're not separating it from its place of nourishment.
Oh, so we're getting somewhere. You're getting somewhere, yeah.
If there's a rabbinic prohibition for that, it's because of the third approach then, which would be limiting
its growth. So we're getting very close. So then what's happening here? What's going on in this case? We don't care about where that original pot was because the Gemara doesn't say anything about where that original pot was.
By putting a second thing underneath, you've limited somehow its
which growth?
The plant is more disconnected from the...
Well, right now it was on my kitchen table, so it wasn't more disconnected from the ground. The Korban Eidah says the case is as follows. You have one pot which has soil and a plant in it. And then you take another pot from your kitchen and you put it on top of that first pot. So, if it's about limiting its growth,
limiting the bottom.
You've just killed the bottom pot. The bottom pot just had plants in it. Mm-hmm. You have now forced a pot on top of that. Mm-hmm. So it's kotzer and zareya at the exact same time.
But it doesn't say nowhere now.
It says, no, the Gemara says that you take one pot and you put it on top of another pot.
Yeah, but the other pot, you imagine that it's...
That there's a plant there. So he's assuming that there's a plant there. Oh. Right, he's assuming there's a plant there. Just like the first explanation is assuming that the pot is on the ground. They're both taking assumptions.
Why would you do that? Why would you force... I mean, unless you...
We don't care about why we're doing things. The Gemara is giving these examples to tell us about how to understand the concept behind it. We're not... I don't know, let's say you're very upset and angry, so you just smash it down. I don't know.
I'm not seeing where the harvesting is taking place.
I'm sorry?
Can you explain where the harvesting is taking place in this?
So let's just explain it. I haven't fully explained it. So at the very moment, the Korban Eidah explains that at the very moment that you violate kotzer, limiting its growth, because the first pot, you limit its growth because you have now just smashed that original pot. At that very moment, you also violate planting.
You're planting the
pot. Because you're planting the top pot. Because that top pot now has some sort of connection to the ground, or to soil. Forget about the ground. It has connection to soil.
Because before it was on your counter.
Yeah, exactly.
So if before it was on the ground.
No, maybe you would also violate, because once you pick it up, it's possible it's no longer on the ground. So at some point. I don't know if it's because of that. Oh, so why did the bottom pot need to be perforated?
For zareya.
Well, there's already soil.
No.
I'm not sure if there's soil. Yeah, probably for the zareya of the top pot. I mean, I don't know if there's soil in the bottom pot. I know it's connected.
Well, if you're saying there's a plant in the bottom pot.
Well, it could be that it's just because it's perforated, it gets all of its soil from the ground.
Okay.
But that's why it needs to be perforated, because of the soil there. So then when I put the top pot onto it, I've killed the bottom pot. And now, but it also gets nourishment from the ground. So as opposed to the first explanation, the point in time where I violate kotzer, is at a different point in time than I violate planting. When I pick up the pot from the ground, I violate kotzer. When I put it down, I violate planting. According to the second explanation, at that same moment that I violate kotzer, cutting, because I'm killing the pot, so at that very same moment I also violate planting. But what comes out of the second explanation is that it's not about removing something from something else. Until now we've been discussing cases where you remove the fish from the ocean, where you cut off the branches from its original source. According to this explanation, we now have a case where you violate kotzer by just putting one pot on top of another. You have not detached anything. Nothing has become detached. You have just limited the growth of that original pot, of that first pot. So this is a totally new definition of kotzer. Because kotzer now is defined as just limiting the growth. So when I cut off the branch from the tree, so how have I violated kotzer? It's not the act of cutting where I violate kotzer.
Detaching it from this.
It's because now that I have this branch in my hand, this branch is no longer going to grow. So it's not the act of cutting where I violate kotzer. It's just that in the end of the day, after I cut it, I have this branch which can't grow anymore. Just like when I put one pot on top of another pot.
I'm killing
the branch.
Then it's not kotzer, it's killing. It's a different...
No, because killing is only by animals and by people. But by plants, it's called kotzer. Oh, okay. When I kill the plant, it's called kotzer.
That's a very interesting point you just made now. So it's not the action itself, it's the result.
It's the result of the action, yeah. It's very important. It's not the action of removing something from something else, either removing it from its... source of nourishment, or moving it from its natural habitat. It's not that action of removal, but it's the end result of having something which can no longer grow. And that occurs whether I cut off the branch, because now this branch can no longer grow, or if it's just putting one pot on top of another pot where I haven't actually cut anything. Nothing has been separated, but I just killed the plant. And that's a third definition for kotzer.
So if it's correct, if it's not the action, only the result, then by sawing off a dead twig, a dead branch from a tree, that should not be
a violation. It should not be a violation. That's correct. In fact, the Gemara...
That's according to any approach.
For any of these approaches, it's also true. If it's removing it from its source of nourishment, perhaps if it's dead wood.
It's dead wood. It doesn't have a source of nourishment.
Exactly. So I'm saying one of our definitions was that when you remove something from its source of nourishment is the violation of kotzer, of harvesting. So then you would not have violated even for that definition.
Yes.
Even for that definition, you would not violate kotzim.
According to all three definitions.
Well, if it's a natural habitat, I don't know, because maybe, it depends on it. It's possible.
You used the language that you took it out of
Michiuso. Yeah, so it does sound like habitat has to be within the context of
life.
Of growth, at least, because the honeycombs are also, they're not, it's not life.
Production.
But it's production, yeah. It's being produced. But you're right. According to this definition, for sure, if it's a dead branch, then you would not violate kotzer. That is what it sounds like in a different Gemara, which we never discussed. And that's the opinion of Rashi and Tosos. They hold that if you cut off a dead branch, you have not violated kotzer.
So would the example say specifically say perforated pot, and not just a pot?
It says atzitz nakov. It's in the first source.
Yeah.
It says
why
perforated.
Why specifically say it's that?
Because otherwise you wouldn't be planting.
It's a perforated or not perforated, it's the same thing. It's a pot.
If there's no soil in that pot,
yeah.
So then it only you need it to be perforated because it has to get nourishment from the ground. If there's no soil in the bottom pot,
for planting.
How do you violate planting? There's no soil in the bottom pot, so you can only get if it's not perforated, then it's not connected to any nutrients.
Okay.
So it needs in order to be connected to the nutrients, it has to have a perforated pot.
But if there's soil in the bottom pot, then it wouldn't have to be perforated.
Right.
Perhaps not. Yeah. Definitely for.
I'm saying according to the carbon eda.
Yeah, wouldn't need to be.
So you wouldn't. So what? Why did the Gemara pick a case of a perforated bottom pot instead of just the pot with soil?
If it gave a case of a pot with soil, you could ask the same question. Why did they give a case of a pot with soil as opposed to a perforated pot? I'm not sure why one's better than the other.
Maybe you wouldn't be chayav for that because you have your plant on the top. Right? In the top pot, in a pot of soil. So adding it to another pot of soil, maybe it's not giving you any more nutrients than you had before.
So you're asking,
connecting it to the ground already, that's already doing something.
I don't know how that works scientifically. I just don't know.
They're probably dealing with what is most commonly found in potted plants are usually in perforated containers.
They're usually in perforated containers?
Yeah.
Not in like potted plants in people's homes.
Yeah, even then. It has to be because the water has to be able to drain out of it. They usually are in perforated containers with like a plate underneath to catch that water. I think that's mostly.
Is that what it's meant? Is that what it's meant by a perforated pot?
But the Gemara all the time.
No, it seems like it's a case. Yeah, the Gemara discussed a lot of cases of non-perforated pots. They're both assuming. Both opinions are assuming that it's a case where it's on the ground. It's not in your home. It's on soil. That's the assumption. I'm not sure what occurred in those days. You have to know what was the normal practice in those days. So again, you have to know what happened in those times to know whether it was what was common. Whether they just had perforated pots, which was just connected to the ground, or they put soil in these perforated pots or in non-perforated pots.
So if you grow something in the pot, I assume that there's soil in it.
Why do you have to assume that?
How else do you grow something? If you would take seeds and put them in a perforated pot, even if it's sitting on the ground, it's not going to grow.
So you're saying there has to be something there? Okay.
It might grow. I mean, the moisture can like, leach back upwards through those perforations into the container. I mean, isn't that the presumption that the...
We could try an experiment.
Right. Either way, the Gemara is clear. Either way, the Gemara is assuming that we have this scenario because that's the way that it's going to get nutrients to the top pot. That's the point of the Gemara. Okay, so that's the Yerushalmi where the definition of kotzer is not just about the act of cutting and removing, but it's about limiting the growth. Just limiting growth is the definition of kotzer, that outcome, not the action, but the outcome. So what I want to get into now is a new discussion, which is trying to understand the opinion of Rashi. We're first trying to understand the opinion of Rashi. We're going to go through a bunch of different Rashis and have a few questions, and then we'll try to pinpoint and try to define how does Rashi understand kotzer. And then we'll try to do the same thing for the Rambam if we have time. If you go to the second source here, this is Rashi. This is Rashi on the Gemara. I didn't quote the Gemara this time. But this is Rashi and the Gemara that we've quoted in the last two classes, where we had four cases, The first case was where you remove the fish from water. The second case was where you remove the fetus from the animal. And then we had two other cases of hops from the bushes and mushrooms. Those are the four cases. So Rashi here is commenting on the first case. On the first case with removing the fish from the water. So he says, Chayev, you have violated Shabbos. Why? So Rashi explains, Mishim netilas neshama desu lo chayev. He says, why have you violated Shabbos here? He says, because you're killing the animal, you're killing the fish. So it's clear that Rashi is of the opinion that this is, the problem here is killing. It's not a problem of kotzer. He does not say that the problem is kotzer. As opposed to some of us, we saw that some commentators did explain that this would be a violation of kotzer. He says that removing the fish from the water is a problem of killing the animal, and not kotzer. And also in the next case, when it's discussing removing the fetus from the animal, he doesn't comment at all. He doesn't say anything. And I believe the implication is that it would be the same violation of killing an animal. Because if it would be a different violation, he should really say something. Right? If he just said that removing the fish from the water is a problem of killing the animal, and then the second case of removing the fetus from the mother, if he really held that was a problem of kotzer, a different violation, he should say something. He should say it.
The Gemara asks about the second case. That's my time. So what's the reason?
But it says Okir Davar Megidula.
Right, which sounds very much like... The simple explanation of that is that it's kotzer.
Yeah, but I would still want him to explain... These are very similar cases. These are two very similar cases. I would want him to explain...
Yeah.
I would want him to explain that it's kotzer. I would imagine that I would have thought that he should have said that it's kotzer. Even if it's not, we see from the case of the fish that it's not kotzer. So why is it not kotzer? When you remove the fish from the water, and I think also the fetus from the animal. So the very simple explanation you could say is that kotzer only applies to vegetation, to plants. What's the Ramban? The Ramban. That was what the Ramban said, exactly. It doesn't apply to animals. Which is already against the Yerushalmi. Right? The Yerushalmi, we already saw, says that it applies way beyond vegetation. It applies to milk and cows. It applies to beyond that. But it seems clear that for Rashi, the reason why you have why it's not a violation of kotzer is because we're dealing with an animal here and not a plant. Fine. So now let's get to the next Gemara. So now this is source 3. Asa shal be midrasha. So I skipped the first part of the Gemara, which is not essential for this point. But they went into the base medrash and they asked the question that the Gemara just asked before, which is, what happens when you violate the following three cases? Which we'll see. We'll just see the answer. This is like Jeopardy. Amrulay, they said to him, Cholev chayv mishum afari. You asked, why is it forbidden to milk a cow on Shabbos? Why is it forbidden to milk a cow on Shabbos? And they say, Mishum Mefarik. Because you are extracting the milk from the cow. We'll get back to this in a second. But Mefarik, extracting milk from a cow, is not listed in the 39 categories. So we're going to have to deal with, well, who cares that you're extracting milk from the cow? What is that a violation of? We'll get to that in a minute. Let's just finish the Gemara. Mechavitz is chayv mishum borer. This is the separating for cheese, I think, right? When you're separating for the milk to create cheese, so then that's a problem of borer, of sorting and separating. And then megavin is chayv mishum bona. And then to actually make the cheese itself is a violation of building, which will also...
Form
of creating, which we'll get to when we discuss bona. But it says that mafarik is chayiv, that cholev is chayiv mishum mafarik. That cholev is a violation of extracting the milk from the cow. Now, what did the Yerushalmi say? When we had the Yerushalmi on Monday, what did the Yerushalmi say? What's the violation? That's kotzer. It's kotzer. So says Rashi, and it's very important, the English is on the next page, and also part of the Hebrew. This Rashi is very important to see the word of Rashi here. Rashi says, what's the problem of mafarik? What's the problem of extracting? He says, Kemo mafarik masui, sheporik ochel mimakom sheniskasabo. The problem of extracting is because you are removing food from where it's within a certain container, where it's within something else. What's the problem of removing something when it's within something else? V'havet toldos dash. That's a separate melacha. That's one of the categories called dash. Dash is threshing. When you remove the kernels from the stalks, you remove the actual kernels from the stalks, so that's removing something from within something else. And that's what's going on here with the milking of the cows. You're removing the milk from the cows, that's equivalent to dash, where you're threshing, where you are removing the kernels from the stalks of wheat. Then he quotes V'isla Amri. There are others who say, told the Kotzer, that this is a problem of Kotzer. To milk the cow is a problem of Kotzer. Who are these others? It's the Yerushalmi.
Right.
Or at least coming from the Yerushalmi.
Right.
The Yerushalmi says that this is a problem of Kotzer. And now Rashi argues. The Rashi says, Vlohi. Don't go on. Rashi says, this is not the case. Why should Rashi say it's not the case? Why should he hold that it's not a problem of Kotzer?
Because vegetation. He says it's only for vegetation.
It's only for vegetation. So the next words he should say is because we're not dealing with vegetation. That's not what he says. It's not what he says. What does he say? Dilav mechoberhu. Because it's not physically attached. It's not physically attached. I don't know what this has to do with anything. But he says that it's not physically attached.
Well, what's not physically attached to
the
what?
Milk. The milk is not physically attached to the cow. It's in. It's
contained.
It's contained within the cow, but it's not physically attached to the cow. He says, Elapakid va'akir v'kai. Batinei hadad. It's just stored within the udder of the cow. Kitzvua bekashia, just like the kernels are within the stalks of the wheat. And then he says, v'lashon mafarik na miloshayach lemeimar el lashon tolish. And if it's true that we're dealing with kotzer, so then it shouldn't use the language of mafarik. His second point is that it's just in terms of the language, it shouldn't even say mafarik of extracting. It should say tolish, which is cutting. But what comes out in the end of the day is that the reason why Rashi holds that milking a cow is not a problem of kotzer, he does not say because it's an animal. That's not the reason. The reason is because it's not attached. So now if we take this Rashi and now go back to the first Rashi that we dealt with.
That he said that it was animals in separate, it's
so the fish, is it contradicting? I don't know, you tell me, is it contradicting? The case is the fish in the water. Is the fish attached to the water?
No, but that's it, where it lives. It's the same thing in the milk. The milk lives there.
So it fits, because in both cases you're not violating kotzer. He says in both cases you're not violating kotzer.
Just violating
killing. In one case, you're violating killing.
One is thing, killing
and then in the
killing, threshing.
Killing and threshing. But it's not kotzer.
Okay, so what's the problem then?
So why isn't that kotzer in the first case?
Is it because it's not vegetation?
Yeah.
It's not because it's not vegetation.
It's not attached.
It's because it's not attached.
Okay.
Rashi holds that in order to violate kotzer, it has to be attached. Physically attached.
Oh, okay.
So that now explains why you have not violated kotzer in the case of the fish in the ocean. Mm-hmm. Because the case of the fish in the ocean is where they are...
But he's saying the case in the ocean, it's because it's killing.
But it's not kotzer. So the question is, why isn't it kotzer?
Because not attached.
Because it's not attached. Just like it's not kotzer when you are milking. It's not because it's vegetation versus animals. That's not the distinction that Rashi makes.
Not attached. That's it.
It's because it's not attached. That's the reason why. Maybe kotzer applies even by categories outside of vegetation. Potentially, it could apply by outside of vegetation.
By a feather.
By a feather to the chicken. Or, I don't know, the fetus to the mother. Is it physically attached?
Yeah.
I think it is physically attached, right?
Yeah.
So we pointed out Rashi doesn't comment there. So I first wanted to say that he doesn't comment because he holds that they're both a problem of killing.
Yeah.
But if now we're saying that the definition, the reason why it's not kotzer is not because it's an animal, that's not the reason, but the reason is because it has to be physically attached. So then maybe there's a difference between removing fish from the ocean and removing the fetus from the mother. Perhaps removing the fetus from the mother is a problem of kotzer.
But why didn't Rashi comment?
Okay, that's a good question. Why Rashi didn't comment? I'm not sure. So then you go back to what Rabbi Lichtman said, that the Gemara itself calls it Ogre Davar Migidulo. The Gemara itself says that, already phrases it, that you're removing it from its original source, so then maybe it's a little different than the case of the fish. But what comes out for Rashi is that the definition for kotzer is removing something which is attached. That is the definition of kotzer.
Sounds like it's sort of back to cutting.
Back to cutting.
Yeah.
Similar to cutting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the difference between kotzer, now there's a very close similarity between kotzer and dash, which is threshing. Dash is to remove something when it's not attached. To cut something which is not attached, but it's just stored within. And kotzer is to cut when something is attached.
I wonder what Rashi thought of the hops.
It's a good question. We'll get to that in a minute. What about the case of the hops? So Jeff is asking, in the case of the hops are not physically attached to the...
Wait, how do we know that they're not physically attached?
The
somebody say that?
They're sitting on thorns.
You've never seen hops? They're not physically attached.
I saw a picture of hops. They look very attached. I looked it up.
They look physically attached?
They're like hanging from the...
Hanging is not
from the
physically
stone.
Attached.
They're not
tied to it.
Look pretty attached. I mean, kernels also look pretty attached.
Yes, I agree.
You have to bang them to get them off.
Yeah.
But are they physically attached, or are they just found within? I don't know. I have to get a farmer here. I don't know. Fine. So his definition seems to be when it's physically attached, and removing it when it is physically attached. So we'll have to get back to the assuming that the hops case is where it's not physically attached. I don't think the mushrooms are not physically attached to the pitcher. I would assume that the mushrooms are not physically attached to the pitcher.
Mm.
They might be on top of the pitcher, but I don't know. I'm not...
Somehow adhere.
Yeah, mushrooms do send out little, like, they call them, like little roots.
Yeah, they have small roots. But you think the roots are within the pitcher?
I mean, there's a difference between attached and like, connected. Like, you know, like when you cut a tree branch off, so it was part of the tree before, and now you've detached that, right? You can also have something that's kind of like a sticky note, right?
Yeah.
A sticky note is attached to my paper, but it's not connected.
I don't know. And then the milk by the cow is also connected.
The milk is not connected. It's stored in a pouch.
In a pad, but it's
being stored.
It's touching,
but it's
not adhering to the walls of it. Okay. Okay. Perhaps.
I have that general problem with milk. I mean, why is it any different taking milk out of an udder to taking milk out of your carton in the fridge? Really. Good point. You know.
We'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Contained in a container. You're just getting
it's
it
a
out
great.
Of
it's thing. A great question. We'll get to it when we deal with Dutch. We'll get to it. But it's a great question.
It's gonna be like 6 weeks from now.
Way more than 6 weeks. We're gonna.
We'll leave you with a troll for a long time. We can leave you more.
It's fine. Until we get to it, just don't drink milk. Okay?
Yeah.
On Shabbos.
Then take it fresh from the source.
I'm saying from your container also. Don't drink it.
So according to other Rabbanim, the Averam, the sin, the Melaham Shabbat, it's not to fish, but to kill it. So I can go and fish, and before it's died, throw it back again.
Well, it's like sports fishing.
My guess is that there's a rabbinic prohibition involved in that.
So you're going to cause it to bleed.
You're going to cause it, may perhaps you're going to cause it to bleed.
It looks like killing.
I used to fish very often.
I don't. My guess is that it's still forbidden.
A lot of fishermen, for example, that they fish the fish from the sea and they throw it back in the boat, but the boat has the water, so they just keep it alive.
Uh-huh.
Because it's just a sport fish, for example.
Yeah, so I'm sure there's a few problems with this. You're not supposed to go on a boat also, but...
Okay, I'm going to go in the shore.
From the shore. My guess is that there's a rabbinic prohibition that we're afraid that you're going to come to leave it out of the water. Once it's already out of the water, we're afraid that you're going to... That's my guess. But
and there's trapping, and there's no eruv beyond the...
I have eruv, okay, let's say I have
Okay. If you ask the right rabbi, you might get a.
I used to fish a lot before with my friends, and everybody goes on Shabbat, like Saturday. So I had to start going on Sundays. I was alone, fishing alone, and suddenly nobody's there.
So let's get to the next Gemara. Sorry, there's also another Rashi where it's in a different place, which says a similar idea. I just wanted to show this from another Rashi. If you look at source 4, or 5, sorry, source 5 on page 2, this is also, it's the same context of milking a cow in a different Gemara, in Ksubis. It says, Mefarik, Hanosek davar mimakom shigidol bo, velo mina mechubar. The reason why you violate milking, it's the same context of milking, is because you are removing something from where it was Mimakum Shiyidabo, where it was grown, the lo min amachubar, Rashi says explicitly, and it wasn't attached. Elamin atolish. But it's separated. Vitolda the dashu, Shemefar Tvua Mikasha. It's very similar, Rashi.
That answers Tez's question.
What was Tez's question?
The milk bottle.
Yeah.
Mimakum Shiyidabo. That it's from where it has to grow from. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That where it's grown from. So you don't have to wait 6 weeks, you see? So it's from where it was grown from, and it's not physically attached. So why does Rashi say, Rashi doesn't explain over here anything about kotzer, but why does Rashi say, v'lo min ha-mechubar, it's not physically attached? Because now that we have the previous Rashi, we understand where this Rashi is coming from. You have to have all the Rashis and put all the Rashis together. The reason why it says, v'lo min ha-mechubar, it's not attached, is because if it were to be attached, it would be a different malacha. It would be a different category of prohibition. A prohibition. It would be kotzer, it wouldn't be dash. Let's get to this last Gemara, and then we'll stop. We'll deal with the Rambam next week. There's a Gemara in Shabbos and Pe'al from Beis, which has the following case. It's similar to the Rishami that we started off with. Hayamunach agabe karka. Let's say you have a perforated flower pot, which is on the ground. V'hinichu agabe yisedos, and you lift it from the ground and you put it on pegs. So now there's airspace between the two. Mechayev mishum tolish. So then you have violated essentially because of kotzer. Tolish is considered to be a subcategory of kotzer. And then the rest is dealing with planting. So the case here is where you have the flower pot on the ground. It's a perforated flower pot. You take it from the ground and now you put it on pegs. So you have violated kotzer. So Rashi says, Chay mishum kosher, kotzer, mishum tolish. This is the next source here in source 7. De'enu nena shuv me'reach ha'karka. The reason why you have violated kotzer here is because now the pot is no longer getting benefit from the nutrients of the ground. It's not getting benefit from those nutrients. But now Rashi adds the following point. He says, V'li nira da'hai chayav lav dafka ela asur mishim didami latolish. This is not a biblical prohibition, Rashi says, but it's rabbinic. It's a rabbinic prohibition. But it's not a biblical prohibition. So now I don't understand. Because if according to Rashi, the definition is about removing something from it being attached, so once I put it onto the pegs and I remove it from the ground, I have detached it from the ground. Now if I understand that it's about removing it from its source of nourishment, I can always claim, and this is how Halacha perceives it, that even if it's just a little bit off the ground, it still gets nutrients from the ground. It doesn't get as many nutrients from the ground, and the process is probably slower, but it still gets nutrients from the ground. So I can understand why it's a rabbinic prohibition. Because it still gets nutrients from the ground. Even though it's on pegs, it still gets some nutrients from the ground. But if the definition, according to Rashi, is based on it being attached, so then once I remove it from the ground, and it's on pegs, so then why isn't it a biblical prohibition? It should be an Isser D'oraisa.
How was it attached before?
It was on the ground.
Attached. According to Rashi.
It would have to be called attached.
Well,
because his definition of kotzer is that it's attached.
Yeah. No, but he's not defining it as kotzer. He's saying this is not kotzer.
So, it's you're asking whether it took root or not. So I'm not sure if it took root or not. I assume that it did take root, but I'm not sure if it took root.
Maybe that's why he considers it not a biblical prohibition.
Because it didn't take root yet. So it didn't take root yet, and then it'll be a rabbinic prohibition. So then any time...
It says, the Gibbs explanation is, the roots of the plant, they could have protruded through the holes to draw sustenance from the ground. And when one lifts it, it detaches it from that sustenance.
So you're saying it did not take root yet?
Just the fact that it could have.
It could have taken root.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, didn't say that it did, so
you're saying because it's similar to Tolish. Okay. So I hear that as an explanation. So it's not really tolish because it was never originally attached to the ground. Alternatively, another explanation is that the way to define attached, and this will also explain the Hobbes case, the way to define attached might not have to be physically attached. It might not have to be physically attached. It might just have to be the way halacha perceives what attached is. Perhaps receiving nutrients itself is a form of attachment. Who says that it has to be physically attached and connected? Perhaps the fact that it gets nourishment itself is a way to connect the two together.
The fish should be good,
sir. No, I don't know. I'm not sure if the fish is...
That water dies.
Yeah, but it doesn't... It's not like the water gives in to the fish. It's not like... I could also explain the fish cases by saying that it doesn't apply to... Well, I can't say that. I don't know. I see a distinction between the fish and the water and this and vegetation. Because the vegetation, the nutrients go into the plant. I don't know if the water goes directly into the fish. The fish has to actively take in the water. It's true. It's surrounded by water, so it's very easy for the fish to drink.
But it takes oxygen from the water. That's how it works.
But that's not the... But it's not, yeah, it's not, you don't see it. I hear that. But another way to think about it is that attachment is not just something which is physical, but even just the fact that it gets its nutrients, so then that's what makes it attached. And therefore, when you put it on the pegs, it's still getting some nutrients, and so therefore it remains attached.
No, so,
well, that's a separate issue. That's a separate issue that you don't get.
You should get it. It's like a relationship.
So we're having two explanations here as to why it's not a biblical prohibition, either because you assume that it was never attached, or you assume that it was always attached, because as long as it just receives its nutrients, it's halachically viewed as attached, even though it's physically not attached. Okay, that's the way to understand it according to Rashi, and therefore it's about, his definition is that removing it from it being attached, that's his definition of kotzer, and then we'll deal with the Rambam next week.